We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, a Texas Tech athletics podcast where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I am your host, Spencer, joined as always by Michael. What is up, man?
Hello. Hello, we got a lot going on this week here in the world of Texas Tech sports. Mm-hmm. What's happening? What is not happening? Do you know?
I don't know what is not happening.
Okay, good.
What is happening? Today was a day of recruiting news for Texas Tech. Basketball and football picked up two commitments apiece, or at least they were announced today. I don't know how long they've been sitting on it, but we'll get to those two additions. Basketball guys were both portal guys. Football guys were both high school guys. Baseball played a couple of big games in Fayetteville. Spoiler alert, you dropped 2 1-run games against formerly the number one team, their number two team in the country. If you want to take any kind of, oh my gosh, I had the word all planned out and I forgot it. Moral victories.
Consolation,
moral victories. You had a lead in both of these games and gave it up late. You're still
a 7-0 lead.
Still plagued by errors, dumb plays, the routine that should be routine that aren't. Namely, like today in the ninth, you had a runner on first get doubled off on a line drive to second base. The very next batter hits a home run that would have tied the freaking game. And then you end the game one batter later, losing by one. Last night, you gave up a 7-run lead.
Including, what was it, a wild pitch advancing a runner that ended up being the go-ahead run or the tie run?
What, today?
No, it was last night. Something happened because I remember I was listening to the broadcast. Oh, it was the hit by pitch. That's what it was.
Bases loaded hit by pitch.
Because Lent kept bringing it up. I don't mean that in disrespect to him. He was frustrated, but not frustrated like two podcast hosts would be frustrated. He was just frustrated like the hometown radio killer guy would be frustrated. Yeah, he was just, well, you know, that free pass sure is hurting you now. You know, he said that a couple of times. Thinking, yep, you're right. You're totally right. He predicted that may come back to haunt us later. Yep.
Yep. Leadoff walks are almost always
oof
backbreakers.
Yep.
We'll talk about that. The TCU weekend series.
Yeah.
Similar.
That's in the past. How much do we have to talk about that? We're good.
Yeah. Mine didn't go your way either. yeah. All that and more. before we get started in earnest though, if y'all missed it last week, y'all should know, or y'all need to know that we have officially joined forces with the College Huddle. What is the College Huddle, Michael? It is the largest and newest internet independent communities, college sports community. We are 68 podcasts strong across this great nation. Podcasts in every division of football, every conference. We actually had to postpone joining one of the regional shows this week. They were coming around wanting to do a Texas Tech preview. I was like, love to. This is not the week for us, which we'll get to a little bit later on why. But anyways, that things like that will be coming a whole lot more, more frequently. We will be talking to other, other podcasts from around the Big 12, from around the country, and get you previews and just insider information, from other programs. And that'll be provided by our good friends across the College Huddle Network.
Yes. And you can follow them at College Huddle. I bet you didn't see that coming, but yeah, it's a
Twitter.
They rebranded. They were originally the Big Ten Huddle, mm-hmm. and they were home to all of the Big Ten teams, a podcast, independent podcast network, and they much like the Big Ten itself, decided to expand, and they expanded even a little bit further to mm-hmm. the vast reach of West Texas and beyond.
But as we know,
it's all West Texas.
Always has been.
Yeah. Credit to Texas Tech for coming up with that on their own and putting it on billboards in Houston. I mean, good job by them.
Yeah.
Them and them alone.
Them alone.
That slogan. Mm-hmm. Yes. No one we know personally started that online. Anyway.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention, there's no action needed on your part to keep up with the 23 Personnel podcast. We're not switching feeds. We're not switching hosts, shifting anything like that. You will just find us in more places. So keep your eyes open for those opportunities and those additional shows and appearances that we'll be providing y'all moving forward. But yeah, so from there, Michael, let's talk football. I think that's most pressing because we got a spring game coming up this weekend. I got a couple of commitments to talk about.
We currently have a spring game coming up.
True.
I have a weather report, but go ahead.
Well, no. So let's start there. Let's talk about the spring game. So Saturday, 1 o'clock, Midland. If you're not in the Midland area, not traveling down, it will be on ESPN Plus, assuming the game is put on. It's not affected by weather. We did see Team Taj versus Team Barron. Michael, I don't know. I mean, I assume it's because these are two guys that are obviously well known within the program. They're captains, and neither one of them are going to be competing in the spring game. But I was nose down and so many other things when that came out. I couldn't even tell you the nitty gritty details of that.
The nudity of it?
Nitty gritty. I was trying to do that and I got stuck on nitty.
Well, it's, I don't think they're picking teams or anything like that. The way the release made it sound is this is just a new format and Texas Tech will announce both team rosters in the days leading to Saturday's annual spring game. So today we're recording a day late today. Today's Wednesday. So they better get on the ball and release that roster. I was hoping they'd have it so we could cuss and discuss who was on each team, but I have not seen that release. And another thing that I found interesting is they're dividing the coaching. So Kittley will serve as the head coach for one team and DeRuiter will serve as head coach for the other. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of in step with how they've done it previously. McGuire will just kind of monitor the action at midfield, similar to previous games, but then play calling duties will be delegated to running game coordinator and tight ends coach Josh Cochran, and offensive passing game coordinator and wide receivers coach Justin Johnson. Then linebackers coach Josh Bookbinder and defensive passing game coordinator and secondary coach Marcel Yates will call the defensive side. So I don't know if I've just not paid attention, but I didn't realize that they went that in depth on allowing the assistants and coordinators to have play calling duties on scrimmages, because I mean, that's just as important as getting some of these freshman guys reps behind the line of scrimmage. You know, it's crucial. You never know when something could happen to one of the coordinators, or someone could get sick. There could be an illness. Someone could get fired. You know, that just all sorts of things could happen to where these guys might have to step up into play calling duties, and some of them may have never done it before, or maybe a little bit rusty. So a chance for them to shake the rust off a little bit as well. But yeah, the weather, as we alluded to earlier, high of 59, 91% chance of rain. According to weather.com, thunderstorms lightly, potential for heavy rainfall, and winds not bad, 15 to 25, but who knows? You know, I've had my eye on this Saturday for a while because that's when my daughter plays soccer, and it turns out Midland has about the same forecast as Lubbock does. So we'll see if that actually comes to play. If it's just rain, which how often does that happen here? How often do we just get nice rain?
Rare.
Yeah, they might continue it, but if it's lightning and thunder and hail and tornado warning and all that crap that usually comes with it, then all right, we'll see what they decide to do.
It's too cold for a tornado.
You would think, but there's no telling.
Yeah.
They just move it to Sunday.
Maybe. Who knows?
Sunday looks like it's supposed to be pretty nice. It'd be kind of cool, but sunny and dry. And that's enough weather talk. I'm sorry. I always end up talking about the weather.
I'm ready for these random cold days to be over with, though.
It is kind of strange bumping the AC and the heat kind of back and forth.
Because, yeah, it's not like it was cool enough just to, like, shut the AC off and open the doors.
No. Today it was 89 today.
It was 90 yesterday.
Yeah. It wasn't like a gentle breeze will cool off the house. Yeah, cool it to a nice ripe 79 if that's what's
stifling, that's what you're feeling. Indoors.
Yeah, just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Hot.
Which is wild. Like, you would think, like, if it's 79 degrees outside, like that's wonderful. Inside it's like dying.
Yeah, that's the worst. I've never understood why that is, but it's completely true.
So we talked about a little at the head of the show. Two new football commits, a defensive tackle, class of 25 defensive tackle, Dylan Singleton, committed out of Larrouville, Louisiana.
That's a good a guess as I'm going to.
Larrouville?
Stifle.
I don't know.
Larrouville.
That's what it is. It's probably Larrouville. 6'4", 280. So he's a big kid. High school guy. Committed today. Unranked, as is the other guy. The other high school commit today was an athlete. He's a utilitarian. Does it all. I think he said he's played quarterback and receiver, running back and defensive back for... I forget the school name, but it's in Sabine. 6'5", 210 on the recruiting services. I think he's projected as a tight end at that height. Maybe
he's listed at 210. What do you think? He's 195?
Yeah, 195. Like, might as well just roll into the wide receiver, but he's probably really slow. Like, if he's 6'5", 195 and as a high school junior, but projecting as a tight end, it's probably because he's slow. Let's be honest. I've not watched his tape, but he is super effective with the ball in his hands. This past season, he as a quarterback threw 65% completion percentage, 1,600 passing yards, 12 touchdowns, ran the ball 140 times for almost 1,000 yards, just under 7 yards a carry, 14 rushing touchdowns, caught 3 passes, all 3 of those were touchdowns for 32 yards. I don't have any defensive stats, but on the offense side of the ball, he did about it all for.
He played defense too?
believe he said he played defensive back.
At 6'5", 210?
Safety, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
Well, he's got to be faster than you think. Apologies, Colt.
Yeah, his name is Colt Sparks.
Like, with a name like Colt Sparks, there's no way you're slow. That's not what Spencer meant. He didn't mean that.
Let's see.
That's some pretty incredible stats to be able to pull all that off and play defense.
Sorry, he plays for Sabine High School in Gladewater, Texas. I had those two things.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Also plays on the basketball team.
Well, he's 6'5", 210, Spencer. I bet he does.
Let's see. Where's Gladewater? It's probably a real tiny school. Let's see. Gladewater, Texas. 903, so East Texas. It is out there. I need to zoom out.
So east of Sweetwater and shallow water.
It is between Tyler and Longview.
Oh, wow. He's over in McConaughey's neighborhood.
Yeah. Hey, now. That's not McConaughey. But
yeah, I don't know who that was.
Hey, now. Anyways, so that's your football update. Super quiet outside of this little flurry of recruiting activity, the spring game coming up this just a couple days away. But here it is. And then here pretty soon will be summer workouts. The rest of your recruiting class will get to campus. You'll get an updated roster. And then you'll get a fall camp leading into game one. So like that's going to be here. Let's shift over to basketball. What do you say?
Good plan.
Okay.
Good plan.
There was some unease, I would say, within the Texas Tech fans about the lack of news. You hadn't heard anything. You had potentially had scheduled guys to come in for visits, or they had come in. You just hadn't heard anything officially announced, but that's all changed. Now you've added your first two commits to this class, this recruiting session, if you will, portal additions. The first guy is a two guard, formerly a freshman from Drake, Kevin Overton. As a true freshman, played nearly 30 minutes a game on a tournament team, which is always impressive. Everything I've seen and heard, skilled offensively. He averaged 11.3 points per game last season, 3.3 rebounds, 1.1 assists, which is where you get the more of a two guard, catch and shoot, off ball offensive type of guy. Shot 44% from the floor, 35 from three, 80% from the stripe. One of the things that our man Money Mainville uncovered, of the however many players last season that logged 1,000 minutes, he had the third fewest turnovers. He had 18 turnovers, Michael, in 1,000 minutes. It's good for 5% turnover rate, the third lowest. The other two guys that had committed 18 or fewer were both seniors. So very
That's
smart.
Incredible.
Yeah, very smart with the ball, very careful, skilled offensively. From those that can project this a little bit, they think, you know, much more, his offensive game is much more progressed than his defensive game. But McCasland and Adams have both said it's easier to teach an offensive player how to play defense than the defensive player how to shoot. So you'll take a skilled offensive guy and try to fit him into a defensive plan. You've also, like you saw this year, kind of made do with guys that could score, but maybe weren't the greatest defenders. Scheme around that maybe a little bit. So then the other guy they picked up, your big man, this is your Warren Washington replacement, although he isn't the offensive threat that Warren Washington is. Maybe this isn't your number one center, your number one five going into next season, but senior transfer out of Pitt, 6'11 guy, Federico. Love the double name.
Easy to remember.
Originally born, I believe, in Cairo, Egypt. Is listed as coming from Helsinki, Finland. Played in some, in a prep academy in the Northeast here in the States. 63 games at Pitt. He started 58 of them for the 2 years he was there at Pitt. Not super skilled, like I said, offensively. Played 21 minutes a game, put up almost 5 points a game, five rebounds. Did shoot 64% from the floor, which means he was super effective and efficient when he took shots. Lots of down low, close shots. About a block and a half a game, you would think. That would be a little bit higher with a guy that size, but only playing 21 minutes, getting a block and a half, and basically a half of a game. It's not that bad. You do want to keep him off the free throw stripe, Michael. Last year was 42% from the stripe. So not the guy you want to be sending to take free throws. Going to turn into Hack-a-Shack, but you've got your first two pieces. Additions, 6'11 center, Federico, and your two guard, 6'5 guy, Kevin Overton, with six more to go.
Yeah, well, least. we did have two more announcements today, kind of confirming stuff we already knew. So Darian Williams officially announced that he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Just to alleviate all speculation, which I'm sure I didn't really see much, but the fact that he hadn't said anything, that leaves that door open. So he closed that today. Thank you on behalf of frothing at the mouth Tech fans who are probably, well, why didn't you say anything? He said something. So there you go. Pop Isaacs also released an announcement today, just kind of an official thank you and trying to leave and enter the transfer portal as anemone. I know what I mean.
Sure.
But anyway, hats off to him. Good note. Good job. I haven't really seen where he's going. You know, the people that claim he's going somewhere all have between 300 and 500 followers on Twitter, so they're all full of crap and don't know anything. So we'll see where he actually does land, but no official word yet if and where he's going to go.
You are getting some help out in the chat, though, Mike. I don't know if you're seeing that. Alan says amicably.
Amicably. Thank you. The amicably be amicably? Wait, I was trying to cross it with Amityville Horror, and I just completely ruined all that. And then right. I said a word with R's in it, which is my kryptonite, and I don't. Anyway, I should have quit while I was already way far behind. But thank you.
Just kept digging yourself in. It's okay.
Yes, that's how I do it, man.
That's what the chat's for. So if you listen to this on the recording, you're missing out. When we do these things, we also stream them on YouTube. Obviously, if you watch the stream afterwards, you'll hear me slurping from my cup because I think it's muted on the recording. But apparently, the mute button is bypassed for the stream.
Yeah, y'all got to see me sneeze earlier. I'm sure that was a sight to behold.
I'm trying to.
At least I had it muted.
Trying to be aware of that, but. But yeah, if you want to do that Tuesday nights, typically at 9 p.m. or like this week, Wednesday night, join in on the fun live. But yeah, sorry, just wanted to throw that little plug in there.
We're good.
You ready to go?
I'm ready.
Softball, baseball?
Yeah, we could do some diamond talk real quick. I'll update everybody on softball. But the first thing I'm going to say is if you really want a softball update, go visit the ladies at seeing-scarlet.com. They have a web zone now. You can go there. You can click on things that they write. They have interviews that they post. And of course, the podcast, which is where it all started. So follow them on Twitter at Seeing Scarlet. Go to seeing-scarlet.com. Read all the cool stuff they're writing. So good news from the softball front, similar to Texas Tech. went from 7th to 6th in Big 12 standings. They won their series, though. Texas Tech, unfortunately, the baseball team did not, but softball team won their series at home versus Kansas 2-1. Did not have a midweek game. And then they are on the road this weekend versus number 5, Oklahoma State. And this is something that, seeing Scarlett has mentioned, Big 12, pretty good at softball, turns out. Number 24, Baylor. Number 5, Oklahoma State. Number 2, Oklahoma. Number 1, Texas. Now, I'm pretty sure the softball team's already played Baylor. I think they lost the series, but they won one game. And of course, like I just said, they're heading to Stillwater this week. And then I think they have Texas left on the schedule, but I don't think they play Oklahoma this season. So, yeah, 4 top 25 teams in the conference. So a tough road ahead, but as I mentioned last week, there is a path to the postseason, and, you know, getting this series win against Kansas was a huge move in that direction and jumping them up a spot in the Big 12 standings.
That also is addressed, excuse me, the path to the postseason for the softball team is addressed on the Seeing Scarlett web zone. So if you want to read more about that, check them out. Catch their fine production podcast and their stream as well. Their videos.
I know sometimes I think we stream simultaneously. So if you can figure out how to get maybe one of us in one ear and one in the other, you're just going to be overloaded with so much golden tech information.
Yeah. I unfortunately, I think we're also up against the Gauchos on Wednesday night. Man. So,
whew.
So Tuesday and Wednesday nights.
We got to iron this out.
Nothing. We are competing.
We got to speak to the programming director.
Competing network productions here, but yeah, they've like you mentioned, they moved up a spot in the Big 12 rankings. Texas Tech moved up a spot somehow, but still got work to do. Still have a path to the postseason cut out. Baseball team is not ranked, but 6th in the conference standings as of today. RPI, I did not check after the game. Before today's game, it had bumped up to 32.
I checked after and it has not updated yet. Okay. It still probably says through yesterday's games.
Yeah, probably we'll update at the end of the day with all the games, but 32, which is was that right on the cutoff as a 3 seed if you just went numerically for regional play, which is not bad. You would think Texas Tech as a 3 seed would be fairly dangerous, a team that you would not want to see in your own regional, especially with the offensive firepower. But yeah, let's talk about the offensive firepower, Michael. Last midweek, following a recording, you blasted Abilene Christian 21-3. That was a fun game. They have put teams on the diamond that have made things a lot more hairy than this game was last week. You started the scoring top of the first with a run, and then you played it eight runs before Abilene Christian scored their first. It was 8-0 after the top of the third. They did get 3 back. All 3 of their runs came in the bottom of the third. But then you put on 5 in the fourth, 6 in the fifth, 2 more in the sixth to get to your 21 runs. And then you run ruled them because of a travel day, 21-3 after 7 full innings. Hudson Luce took the win. And former Red Raider Cade Magar took the L, unfortunately. Transfer there for the Wildcats. Started off with a Gavin Cash home run. And the top of the first, McGee homered. You set the school record, single game home run record with 9 home runs in the game.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Cash homered twice. Gavin Cash homered twice. Drew Woodcox homered twice. Cade McGee homered twice. And then, and TJ Pompey homered twice. And I think one of those was a salami, a grand slam. And then Tracer Lopez had the other one to make it 9. You rolled out Hudson Parker, Isaiah Rhodes, Hudson Luce, Max Huffling, which of course you had to throw Huffling and his return to Abilene, and then Carson Baugh again. And then you took on 2, 4, 6, 7 different Wildcat pitchers through 7 innings. Cade McGarr, Chandler Benson, Blaine Palmer, Dash Albus, Chandler Freeman, Nolan Foster, another Texas Tech transfer, and Parker Matthews. Played a little bit of everybody. I mean, Cash got the start at first. Stripling came in. Bravo played in center. Gage came in. Bazell got the start behind the dish. Maxie came in. Will Burns came in for Austin Green. Davis Rivers got an at-bat. Coming in for Owen Washburn. So just about everybody got in on the action there in Abilene. On your road trip out to, you went Abilene to Fort Worth to Fayetteville. But on your road trip out there, Wednesday, on your way to Fort Worth. So you put in some light work on Wednesday, 21-3. You were hoping that you didn't score all your runs for the weekend in Abilene. Game one Friday versus the Frogs. You felt pretty good after that one. You take that one Friday night, 7-1. TCU starts the scoring at the bottom of the third inning with a solo shot. That's their one and only run of the game. You respond top of the fourth with 3, 1 more in the sixth, 1 in the eighth, and 2 in the ninth. Ryan Free got the start and the win for you on the bump. He went 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run. It was earned, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. Only threw 55 pitches, which is super efficient. Jacob 4-0, Rogers,
by the way.
Yeah. Jacob Rogers came in through 2 innings, only gave up 1 hit, no runs, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. That was a great outing for him. And Josh Sanders closed it out, 2 innings, 1 hit, no runs, no walks, 2 strikeouts. Tech pitchers combined for 106 pitches through 9 innings, whereas the TCU pitchers combined for 195. Their starter, Peyton Tolley, went 5 innings, 7 hits, 3 runs, 3 earned, 2 walks to 11 strikeouts. You had 17 strikeouts on the evening, but still were able to plate 7 runs on and 13 hits. TCU had just the 7, nope, the 6 strikeouts, but 5 hits and 1 run. So you got the weekend off, started off the right way. Saturday, different story. They threw their best guy out of the pen, Ben Abelt, and then threw Cole Klecker, who we thought would be a starter. He came in to close that game out on Saturday. He threw an inning to make sure that they secured that one. Kyle Robinson does get the loss there. He falls to 3-4. TCU opens a scoring bottom of the first. It's an RBI single. Then Texas Tech scores on a 2-run double from McGee, top of the second. TCU responds bottom of the third with a 1-run triple. They add on 1 more in the sixth, RBI single, and then a bunt single RBI in the eighth. And get it to 4-2. Late in that game, it was not being able to move guys over. Your situational heading was weak Saturday. Your leadoff guy in the ninth walked. Cade McGee walked to start the ninth inning. We talk about how leadoff walks are almost always just detrimental to the defense. Tracer Lopez comes in after him, singles. So you get a guy on, you get runners on first and second, no outs. Then they put Klecker in on the mound, and then you get 3 consecutive strikeouts. You can't get the guys over. Pompey, Cash, and Bravo. So you, even the series, you dropped that one. You had guys on base. They're late. Then you look forward to Sunday. You're like, all right, let's go win the series on Sunday. Ben Abelt, Cole Klecker, came out of the bullpen on back-to-back days. For the Frogs. I clicked on the same game twice. That I was like, there's no way that they would throw similar innings in two. No. Give me a second.
Well, Klecker did come. He did come back in.
Okay, there it is. On Sunday, TCU, like, you just get behind the A-ball, all these. TCU scores three in the bottom of the first. You do even the game up, one run apiece in the second, third, and fourth, and get back to 3-3. You take the lead with a run in the fourth. No, sorry. You tie it in the fourth. TCU immediately retakes the lead, the bottom of the fourth. And then 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 are all zeros. It's a 3-run home run for TCU to start the scoring. And then it was Washburn double, Woodcox double, and a Cash double to get your runs in the second, third, and fourth. Mac Huer got to start. He only goes 3 2/3 on Sunday. 4 hits, 4 runs are all earned. 3 walks to 2 strikeouts. Josh Sanders comes in and goes 2 1/3. Parker Hutera. Sanders and Hutera both combined for a hit apiece and no runs. 1 walk and 3 strikeouts between them. Mason Bixby got the start for TCU. He goes 3 1/3. So neither starter on Sunday made it out of the fourth inning. And he gave up 5 hits, 3 runs. But both bullpens, man, they just came out and just shut everything down. Ben Hampton came in relief of Bixby. Goes 2 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 2 strikeouts. Zachary Collier, 2 2/3. And Cademan Parker gets the save there the ninth inning. Recording 3 outs, 1 strikeout. So you drop the series on the road. You lose game 3 by a run. You had 5 innings to scratch across a run to tie, and you couldn't muster it. Saturday, you had guys on, you couldn't move them over. So you lost 2 games by 3 combined runs. You know that sometimes your bats go cold on the road. That looks like what happened Saturday, Sunday. You're like, okay, well, let's go get some RPI points in Fayetteville. Continue your road trip out to Arkansas. Taking on, at the time, it was number one team Arkansas. They had a 23-game home win streak. Tuesday's night game, it took not extras, but a walk-off sack fly in the ninth to win it. You lost 8-9, but as we talked about, you had a 7-0 lead in the fourth. You felt pretty good after your 6-run second, where you started off. Cade McGee hit a 2-run home run. Maxie hit a single to drive in a run. Cash hit a single to drive in a run. Austin Green, who went 5 for 5 on Tuesday, had a 2 RBI double to get your 6 runs there in the second. And then Green, when he came back up in the fourth, was an infield single, but it knocked in a run. And then you just had a just horrendous, horrendous fifth inning, Michael. Don't know if you watched it.
That was, I felt really bad because... Yeah, I started watching that game. I was hooting and hollering all during that 7-0 run. And did they change pitchers twice that inning?
Yes.
And so,
you got Zach Erdman out there, and he went the first 4 innings, and he looked great.
Yeah. Well, I was just loving it. But then I forgot what I was doing. I think we were putting the kid to bed, and I think I got on the treadmill or something, and for some reason I was watching a show instead of the Tech game, heaven forbid. And so the show ended, and then all of a sudden it's 7-5. What? And I think they scored again while I was watching. I can't remember. I thought, oh boy. I thought Tech had a, maybe didn't have it wrapped up, but I knew it was going to be one of those kind of perfectly bad matchups for Texas Tech, because yes, so far on the year, Arkansas's offense has not been that dominant, but their defense has. But then Tech's pitching has not been very dominant. So I felt like at any moment, Arkansas's offense could wake up, and it did.
Yeah. So both teams had a 6-run inning. You just had it first, so you felt pretty good about the game. But obviously when a team responds with a 6-run inning, that momentum kind of swings in their favor. Zach Erdman finishes the night, though, 4 complete innings pitched. He did pitch into the fifth, but was lifted before he recorded an out. 5 hits, ultimately 3 runs charged against him. He gave up 1 in the fourth and was charged with 2 in the fifth, but they didn't cross when he was on the mound. One of those weird things, like the guy's got on base against Erdman, but at the time that they crossed the plate, Erdman was no longer in the game. So it's like, where do you put him? Like, technically you give him to the pitcher that put him on base, even though they didn't knock him in. So he finished the night 3 runs, all 3 earned, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. Hudson Luce, man, he struggled. He only records 2/3 of an inning. He only gets 2 outs there, in the fifth or whatever inning it was. The fifth. 2/3, 4 hits, 4 runs, all 4 earned, 2 walks, 26 pitches. So it happened fairly quickly. Isaiah Rhodes comes in, gets a final out there that inning, and then goes another inning and a third after that. He finishes an inning in 2/3. And Rhodes looked great. It looked like he came in just a little bit too late. No hits, no runs, 1 walk to 3 strikeouts. So he went a full inning longer than Hudson Luce did on 1 fewer pitches. He threw 25 pitches to get 5 outs. Hudson Luce threw 26 pitches to get 2 outs. Derek Bridges came in for his 1 left-handed batter, but does earn the strikeout there, and then immediately pulled after his 7 pitches. Jacob Rogers, the ESPN broadcast did him dirty, man. As they were coming back from break, they showed his warm-up where he threw like 3 of his warm-up pitches to the backstop.
Like, oh, man.
This dude's wild. Y'all buckle in. I was like, Carl Ravage and whoever it was, they were like actively rooting for the Razorbacks. They were getting all hyped and excited. Ravage was, his microphone was peaking every time the Razorbacks did something offensively. If you don't know what that means, like he was speaking loud enough that it was cutting off, and it rolled bad audio technique, because he was just, his enthusiasm for Arkansas baseball just unbridled Tuesday night. They actively campaigned to get their beer hats sent up, and they got 2 of them sent up to the booth that they could wear during the game. I was like, it's not a good look that a network broadcast team not only is rooting for a team that they're covering, has team branded cups, and not like a plastic cup that you would get from like the concession stand that you go down, like, hey, you get a soda and it's like the big one you get. And it's got Texas Tech stuff all over it. These were like, and maybe they give these to all the media members, but still, if you're going to have a camera in the broadcast booth, like maybe refuse to take the team branded merch. But both of them had Arkansas branded like Yeti cups in front of them. Like I said, we're rooting for the team as the game was going on. Got their beer hats sent up that they could wear. It was a strange thing to see. Now, of course, the SEC is the darling of ESPN. That's what you had to deal with ESPN broadcast. But that was tough. Especially when it was going against you.
Yeah. It just kind of piles on at that point.
Yeah. It was just like, just fed up. You're like, you just felt it coming. Everything was compiling, conspiring against you. Like the broadcast team, the pitching, how Tadlock was managing his pitchers, because it just felt like Erdman was lifted strangely, and then like Luce was left in there too long. And then he lifted Rhodes when he was doing really well to get Bridges in there for one guy. You're like, but Rhodes was doing so well, and Bridges usually comes in and like implodes, but then Bridges got his one out and then he was lifted. I don't know. Everything was just like, what's going on? But then, okay. So the ninth inning happened. Arkansas had tied it in the bottom of the eighth. Fielder's choice RBI there. And then in the ninth, man, you get a fielding error by McGee, and up until that point, he had like, he was a vacuum over there. He gobbled up everything, was just making all kinds of fantastic plays. So the guy reaches on an error technically by McGee. Hutera is on the mound there in the ninth. He gets a chopper ground ball back to him. He turns to start the double play to get the lead runner at second, throws the ball into center field.
Yeah.
You get a fielding error, a throwing error. Next batter hit by pitch. So like he's wild. He's lost it. Bases are loaded. They bring in Souza to pinch hit. They bring one of the outfielders in to play as a fifth infielder. They had to change gloves. So I don't know if the player wanted to have an infield glove and not just play with his larger outfield glove, or if it was a color issue because it was a light for dark color switch. But you get five guys in the infield. Outfield is playing relatively shallow because anything really behind you, it's going to score a run because bases were loaded, no outs. You needed to be shallow enough. If you caught a pop fly, you could throw a runner out at home. But what ended up happening is Souza hit a fly ball deep enough to right field. Harrelson was out there in right field. He had to take it just a few steps back, but it was far enough. Throw into to Cash. It was a relay, but wasn't in time. So they walked it off Tuesday night. Unfortunate. And then today, you're kind of down after what happened last night. Arkansas starts the game bottom of the first with a leadoff home run. You're like, well,
at least it was a single though. It was a single shot, right?
One run. You're like, their bats are alive after they hadn't scored eight runs their last whole series, and they scored nine runs in a game. They start the game off with a home run. You respond back in the second with a run. McGee reaches on a fielding error by their second baseman. Austin Green scores. Souza, who was their hero Tuesday night, hits a solo shot and the second to retake the lead. In the third, Texas Tech gets Gavin Cash and Will Burns on base and over. Kevin Bazell hits a ground rule double into the right field corner to score those two guys to retake the lead, 3-2. Arkansas scores two runs in the bottom of the sixth to tie it, and then they retake the lead. You load the bases and then drive a run in with a hit by pitch in the bottom of the eighth to get it a two-run game. And then, like I was talking about a little earlier today, ninth inning, you get Drew Woodcox's leadoff walk. It's not the first time it's happened in this road trip. You get the leadoff guy in the ninth inning, which you don't end up doing anything with it. He walks, then Landon Stripling lines into a double play. I don't know if it was a hit and run or if Drew Woodcox thought that ball was getting through, but he took off running as soon as the ball was hit, but it was smashed right at their second baseman, who turns and makes an easy flip over to first to get the double play. Very next pitch, Cade McGee hits a home run, which had Stripling not reached base, if it was just Woodcox on, and that home run still occurred, that's a tie game. But it's a solo shot there. Garrett Bame comes in to pinch hit. It's this his first time hitting since I think the Texas series. And he strikes out swinging on three pitches to end the game. So yeah, we talked about the RPI bump you're going to get regardless of the result. And you are going to be beneficiaries of playing number four RPI team Arkansas here. You had wonderful opportunities to win both these. You had leads in both of these games. Splitting would have been fantastic, but losing a one-run game on the road against number two team, it is what it is. You just kind of accept it. You just have to kind of swallow, like, man, you had a shot and you just couldn't do anything with it, which happens, right? But going into the series with Arkansas, your team is batting .324. Your starters, Michael, seven of your nine starters and your offense there are batting over .300. Which I know when we've done previews before, we've talked about like other teams that may have one guy or two guys above .300.
Yeah.
Damian Bravo, he's,
I think Houston was that team that just didn't have anybody of that caliber. Yeah.
Bravo's been limited. I understand that there may be an injury there and his playing time may be coming down a little bit. His average dipped 30 points, but he's still hitting over .400, .420, leading your team in an average. Kevin Bazell, .350, Drew Woodcox, .362, TJ Pompey, .346, Gavin Cash, .308, Owen Washburn, .305, Austin Green, .313. These weren't updated before any of the Arkansas games. Dylan Maxey gets a start here every now and then. He's hitting .365. The only other starters that aren't hitting .300, Tracer Lopez, .270, Cade McGee, .286. Stripling also flirting there with starting time. In terms of like number of at-bats, he's at .282. But as the entire team, you're batting .325. Your starters are averaging .330. Scored 360 runs. Like, again, this is before Arkansas. You've hit 65 home runs. You've taken 224 walks to 292 strikeouts. Your team OPS is just under 1,000, which is phenomenal. Your starters are hitting 1010. Starting slugging percentage, Michael, .571, which is just absurd. Drew Woodcox, .723. He's leading the team and he's leading the starters in slugging. The other guy up there is Davis Rivers, but he's got 17 at bats. Woodcox has 94. So that's some sustained success. Bame slugging is .778. He's got 10 at bats. So Woodcox is not at 10 as many, has been up to bat 10 times as much as Bame has and still has a over .700 slugging percentage. Offense by these numbers isn't the whole story. That's not the problem. It's not the whole story either. Situationally, I think is where you have an issue with it. Although you did get a sacrifice bunt today from TJ Pompey. Now he could have been attempting to bunt for a hit. Either way, it was a sacrifice bunt in the books. Successfully moved runners over. I believe that was right before Bazell hit that ground rule double to move in Cash and the other runner. I already mentioned. I'm blank on it. Either way. It's been your pitching at times, but it's really been your inability to make the routine play. Your starter's ERA is coming down a little bit. It's 5.69. It's not exactly where you want it, but it's coming down. Their whip 162, opponents are batting 281. You wish the ERA was a little bit lower, but you can live with those other numbers. Coming into the Arkansas series, your bullpen actually had a really good outing, based on this weekend. Their ERA had dropped under 5, 491 with a 154 whip, opponents batting 268. So your pitching staff's combining for a 521, which is good for 8th in the Big 12. That's also moved up a spot. Fielding, errors-wise, hasn't been the problem that it was earlier in the season. 42 errors in 37 games. 969 fielding percentage, so it's 8th in the Big 12. So bottom half, but not terrible. It's been situationally and just the implosions when they happen. It's just been horrible. You're coming up against a West Virginia team this weekend, that doesn't seem to have those implosions, if you will. They're more steady. Because if you look at their stats, their offensive numbers, defensive numbers, they're not that far different from you, removed from you.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
But they're tied for first in the Big 12, 11-4, where you are,
9-9, I think.
9-9 at this point. They just came off a sweep at home versus UCF. They're tied with Oklahoma. Like we said, they won the series versus BYU at home. They beat Oklahoma in Norman. They swept Kansas in Lawrence. They swept UCF at home. They've only lost one Big 12 series, and that was at Oklahoma State. Their RPI is number 27 coming into today. They were hosting Pitt tonight. Michael, how'd that game go?
They won.
Yeah.
Backyard base brawl.
There you go.
West Virginia wins 6-3.
6-3. So you're welcoming in the streaking West Virginia Mountaineers, winners of at least 4 straight. But their numbers don't really scare you. They just don't mess up like you do. They're like the Kansas State in football. They're just even.
Yeah, they steal more bases, but nothing else pops so much. They definitely give up a lot less home runs from pitching, but
15 over the season.
Yeah. I mean, like 50% less or whatever.
Yeah. As a team, they're batting 273. You're batting 324. They're slugging 461. You're slugging 553. On base, 371 to your 436. They've hit 53 home runs to your 65. They scored 237 runs to your 361. They've struck out 306 times. You're 293. They've attempted 40 more stolen bases than you have. They're 64 of 79 on the season. You were 36 of 39 coming into this series. And of course, noodle arm Hudson White throws out one of your would-be base stealers last night by a mile. You're like, what's happening? Defensively, the teams are batting. They're starting pitching. They're carrying a team ERA of 5.09. Yours is 5.21. They're one spot ahead of you. Opponents are batting 2.49 against them. They're batting 2.76 against you. They walk more guys than you do, 176 to 159. Their guys have given up 29 home runs to your 44. They've given up 189 runs to your 214. They've struck out 341 batters to your 328. Fielding is almost 10 points better, 978 to your 969. Like I said, like nothing really pops out. Like, oh man, they have a huge advantage there. They're super aggressive. That's always been a Macy team. Excuse me, Maisie. You get them this weekend. JJ Weatherholt in and out of the lineup. He's only played in 12 games this season. Did come in this past weekend against UCF, but was pulled in the third inning. Maisie was asked about it, and he gave some glib answer and saying like, "Well, he hasn't eaten today, so we sent him to the B Dubs across the street." Okay, dude. But sure, he's like the number one draft prospect in all of college baseball. So if he's back or at least coming back, I mean, he may not be full strength yet, but through the 12 games, he's batting 341, 482, 561, three doubles, two home runs. Let's see, did he play tonight? If he got lifted early on Sunday, I don't know if he would have played in the midweek.
Just for the record, it was Tuesday night when they played. It's Tuesday.
I'm so used to.
It's me too.
I was playing on Tuesday. I was recording on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's when we play. Let's see, who did pitch? I think I have it on there.
All right, here we go. Weatherholt did not start. Yes, he did. He had one at bat and got a hit, and it was lifted. Yeah. He went one for one. Anyways, the guys you can expect on the mound. I want to talk about this. They've got a guy, Derek Clark. I'm sure you've heard about it by now, but he's had six starts this season, Michael. His last four consecutive starts, he's gone complete games. He's thrown four straight complete games, won three of them. He's 4-0 on the season, carrying a 2.15 ERA. Opponents are batting 196 against him. And he's thrown a lot of pitches to do it, 117 to 127 pitches in those four games. But on the season, he's thrown 46 complete innings, 33 hits, 14 runs, only 11 earned, 10 walks to 41 strikeouts, which is a really good strikeout to walk ratio, obviously. Only given up six doubles and two home runs, only one wild pitch and three hit by pitch this season through his six games.
Gosh, we get that in warmups.
Yeah. If you see Derek Clark, I mean, he may go the entire game and save their bullpen for the other two games.
Wow.
Which they're going to need, because one of their starters, Tyler Switalski, I think they've thrown him on Sundays as more of an opener, short starter. He hasn't pitched out of the fourth inning since March 2nd. But on this season has nine starts. It's carrying an ERA north of 7.763. Opponents are batting over 300 against him. So if this is the starter on Sunday, you should
go.
Be teeing off against him.
Please.
Their other guys are right-handed. Aiden Majors, 3-2 on the season, nine starts, 4.56 ERA. Otherwise, kind of unremarkable. So you got a guy that goes complete game, middle of the road guy, and then a guy that will throw two and a third while giving up eight runs. But the good thing is you're back at home. Yeah, you may have some weather Saturday to deal with, so you may end up playing a doubleheader one of these weekend days. Let's see, if you get a doubleheader pushed to Sunday, does that mean both games are run rule eligible? I wonder about that. Or if you'd play like early Friday afternoon, Friday night, then Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, that might be the thing.
We'll see, because Tadlock's weather.
Could they do a doubleheader on Saturday? No, Saturday's the bad weather day. I'm an idiot.
So,
yeah.
You got an opportunity. Again, nothing remarkable about this West Virginia team, except they're up there tied for first place.
Their record.
Except for their record.
They win games.
Their RPI backs up. They're at 27. You're at 32. Super aggressive, as they have been under Mazie. But just got to get to the guys. Maybe don't let Clark go nine innings. Maybe get them in the end of their bullpen a day early. We'll see though. You've got an opportunity here to claw your way back into the conference standings a little bit. It doesn't get any easier. I mean, you've got Oklahoma State still left on your schedule. Got to go to Kansas. They're no slouch, but kind of running out of time. You do have New Mexico in midweek next week. Their RPI, as we're now, the RPI watching season. hosting New Mexico on Tuesday, the 23rd. Their RPI is 220. And if we were a team like A&M, this would be a game that gets cut.
Yeah, probably. Yes.
We're not A&M, and that's not how 10 Tadlock rolls. And the next weekend, you're on the road in Lawrence. Take on the 19-14 Kansas Jayhawks, 7-8. Tied in the Big 12 standings right behind you in seventh place with Kansas State and Cincy. RPI at 93. So they've got Baylor this weekend. Anything else on baseball, Mike, before we wrap this up with what do we learn?
I'm good, brother.
All right, let's get to what do we learn.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right. Both of us, I believe, went to a touch truck on Saturday morning.
Yes.
Put on by the wonderful Junior League of Lubbock. If you didn't know what this is, it's an opportunity for all these local agencies, whether it's EMS or fire or transport with the hospitals, to bring out their fancy vehicles. We had SWAT vehicles out there. We had construction vehicles. I think the Lubbock waste management team was out there with one of their trucks.
Yeah,
great for kids to get in there.
Garbage truck, yes. That was a highlight, was the garbage truck.
Yeah.
And every now and then they'd fire it up and empty a dumpster.
Yeah. So it's a cool event for the kids to get in and
it is.
Climb around these vehicles that they see. Yeah, flying around on the roads next to them. Like, oh, that was cool. The boys went into the SWAT truck, which they thought was really cool. They got in the Covenant Children's helicopter.
Oh, man.
Which, I mean, of course, I had to go check out.
Yeah, too. There was a Covenant ambulance there, too.
Yeah.
That I saw.
I had to go
right
say
hi. Next to it.
I had my peeps.
Yep.
On the specialty transport team. Ran into some friends. I actually ran into Chuck from the Discord. What's up, man? I don't think you recognized me when I introduced myself. I was wearing a hat and glasses because it was bright that morning. It's like, hey.
Oh, nice.
Spencer with a...
You know, I think I saw him from a distance, but I wasn't sure. So yeah. You must have been there about the same time I was at some point.
We bounced...
10:30-ish.
Yeah, we were out there.
When we got there.
Yeah, we missed it. We were probably walking to the car 10:40. We
probably
just passed you.
We didn't stay long. You know, my 7-year-old, her highlights were the city bus.
Yeah, that was.
She loves buses. Like the only two things she went in the city bus, then she went in the school bus,
mm-hmm.
right next to it. And then I kind of forced her to go into the, they had a big Volvo semi truck there, that gray semi truck. They had the sleeper cab and stuff in it. It's like, oh, let's go in there. Let's check it out. It's really cool. And so she went in there with me just to kind of humor me. And, oh, she went on one of the LPNL bucket trucks, which is fun. One of those really, really tall bucket trucks. And it was cool because we got up there and they had purposefully left some hardware around. And so I was able to show her what it was and point to it. And she could not have cared less. But I did know what it was.
Yeah.
And it was interesting.
It was cool until the kids started honking the horns.
Not a fan of the honking.
No. Nope.
Not a fan. And I know that from 9 to 10, and they advertise it, it's very clearly known that from 9 to 10, that's when they're not doing honking or anything like that. They cut it out there. But dare I say that should be 9 to 10 is honking only.
Let's flip it.
And let's flip it. Let's flip it from 10 o'clock on. Pull those fuses, my people. No one gives two F's as what a Ford Explorer horn sounds like. We all,
they're all the
have
same.
Heard a Chevy Silverado horn. I mean, none of this is exciting. It's just kids honking horns.
Yeah.
There's not even cool horns anymore, really. They just sound like horns.
It'd be different if there was like one of the
they're really loud.
Horns. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, nothing. No, it was all. They're all the same. And they were like.
Just kids behind the wheel of a F-350 ambulance honking a regular everyday Joe F-note horn or whatever. And you're just, this is not, and I'm standing in line in front of it and there's nowhere I can go. And there's, stinking kids behind the seat of this GMC thinking he's, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool, man. I'm glad you're having a good time. My daughter and I are just, we can't move because we're standing in line and you're just going nuts at a horn and we're in front of you because yeah. that's the line to see the bucket truck.
Yeah. I'm out on the honking, but the rest of the event was pretty cool.
It was. Everything else was great. It's a really cool event. They had a lot of local businesses out there giving her out all sorts of swag. It's a really cool event. Not a fan of the honking.
Got cool hard hats and stress balls. There's the shape of a helicopter and 18-wheeler trucks, but yeah.
One other thing. I was a little bit disappointed in the lack of farm machinery.
There wasn't any.
I don't think there was any farm machinery. They had some construction equipment, which is great.
Yeah.
Always exciting.
Big dump trucks.
Oh, yeah. Ones. And some big cranes and excavators and mm-hmm. Front loaders, all that kind of good stuff. But not a tractor. Not a single tractor.
Or a combine or a
cotton
harvester. Nothing.
Yeah. Let's get a telehandler out there or something. Let's do a little just a tractor with a shredder on it. That'd have been great.
So did you and the little missus come home and have to play some farming simulator? Here's the stuff you missed out on, my sweet girl. Yeah.
We got to scratch that itch. No.
That's
unfortunate. What did we do that day? But yeah, we didn't stay very long cuz she was not a fan of the honking either cuz you just could not avoid it.
I was what were we doing Saturday? I had to get back. Oh, I had to go call a 12:30 T-ball game. So I had to pick up lunch right as the restaurants were opening up for lunch. I had to pick that up, run home, then eat real quick, change, and then get out to the fields off of Milwaukee in 1585 to call one singular modified T-ball game and run home and then jump back into study mode with the wife. We mentioned it, study mode. She took her NCE. So for those that don't know, it's a national licensing test, or it will now opens up for her to apply for licensing. But one of the things that she needed to do was pass this test. She passed it today, flying colors. So super proud of her. Way to go. One step closer to becoming a licensed professional counselor, an LPC, mental health counselor provider in our community, which is desperately needed. Looking forward to getting out there. Well, she is very, very soon to get her clinical hours started. Has some opportunities. There's a clinic here. It's pretty close. That's already reached out and says, "Hey, let us know when you know when your test, what your score is, and we can get you onboarded." I don't know if we're ready for that, for her to reenter the workforce tomorrow
immediately.
but soon, potentially. So. Super proud of her.
Congratulations. I mean, that's congratulations to her. That's such a big burden and a big relief to have something like that out of the way.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously something that she's had like this on, it's been on her heart for so long to, that's what she wants to do professionally. And up until now, it's all been prep work. It was schoolwork, was studying for the exam to graduate. And then of course we had, our third child, just a couple months after she graduated. So she didn't want to take the exam just a few weeks after that.
Yeah.
And then she wasn't prepared, to take it. It's often like two big windows, like in April and October. She didn't want to take it last October. She wanted to be home with the baby a little bit longer. And it's been a blessing for us and our family. But with how long this process kind of like the lead up time to it, it's like, let's go ahead and do it now. Then she's got to start her clinical hours within so many years of graduating and all that kind of stuff. But anyways, one step closer, but supremely proud of my wife for, just taking one more giant step towards, what we feel is like her calling, and she's going to be helping a lot of people very, very soon. So, we celebrated tonight, we picked her up from her exam, and then her and our two littles went out to lunch. And then tonight, it was just her and I went to dinner. It was a date. We haven't gone on a date in forever, it feels like. So we got a lot of great time to the talking. What's next? What are we doing next?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not quizzing. You're not quizzing her at dinner with your flashcards. You just get to hang out.
Yeah, for sure. So, right. That'll do it for us on the 23 Personnel Podcast. We'll be back on our normal schedule next Tuesday. But yeah, recruiting season's now underway. Process happening in both football and basketball. Football spring game this weekend, assuming the rain holds out, in Midland, 1 p.m. Baseball this weekend, West Virginia. But for Michael, I'm Spencer. We'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast. Help us out by subscribing, rating the show, and leaving a review. Follow us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Puntsuck, and Michael at Michael_LBK. Be sure to catch the next episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.